Where am I?
In the village.
What do you want?
Information.
Whose side are you on?
That would be telling. We want information.
Information. Information. You won't get it.
By hook or by crook, we will.
Who are you?
The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Back in the 1960s, Patrick McGoohan was the highest paid actor in the world, an international star due to his role as John Drake in Danger Man. Danger Man was a terrific series, known on these shores as Secret Agent. Despite how cool that show was, it's probably best remembered on these shores to this day for its hit theme song.
Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number and taken away your name.
There is foreshadowing of Patrick McGoohan's next series, The Prisoner, in the lyrics. They've given you a number and taken away your name. An acclaimed theater actor in the 1950s, a talent so prodigious even Orson Welles found him intimidating, McGoohan turned down the role of James Bond, recommending for the role Sean Connery, with whom he had worked. He turned down the role because of the influence he knew it would have on impressionable youths. To him, Bond, a man who kills and who beds women indiscriminately, is no kind of heroic role model. It is ironic, perhaps, then, that McGoohan gained worldwide fame for essentially playing James Bond on the small screen. And yet, sticking true to his beliefs, his character of John Drake never uses a gun and never so much as kisses a woman. No sex, no gunplay. And still, the show was incredibly exciting. Actor that he was, McGoohan soon began to bristle within the strict confines of the role. He needed a bigger challenge, something his shooting schedule was unlikely to allow. At that time, actors could not just walk away from contracts, however, so he began to kick around ideas for a new show, one that he might be able to sell ITV owner Lou Grade on as an alternative to another season of Danger Man. Writer George Markstein, with whom McGoohan had worked on Danger Man, told him about Inverlair Lodge in Scotland. The lodge had been used by Special Operations Executive during the Second World War as a detention or internment camp for those individuals who refused to take part in covert operations once they became aware of the full details. Some people were unable to kill when the occasion was reduced to a one-on-one scenario, for example, as opposed to the anonymity of a battlefield exchange. With information being released on a need-to-know basis, their training meant that they were in possession of highly classified and secret information relating to pending missions and could not, therefore, be allowed to return to public life where a careless remark could have compromised their secrecy. The residents were, largely, people who had been compromised. They had reached the point in their career where they knew too much to be let loose, but they hadn't actually done anything wrong. They weren't in any way traitors. They hadn't betrayed anything. But in their own interest, it was better if they were kept safely hidden away. Inverlair Lodge was known as Number 6 Special Workshop School. And of course, McGoohan would use number 6 as his character's number, no name is ever given, in The Prisoner. Though when he pitched the show to Sir Lew Grade, he asked what would happen if his Danger Man character, John Drake, wanted to resign from his secret agent position. Might he not end up in number 6 Special Workshop School?
I will not make any deals with you. I've resigned. I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
That premise led to Grade saying the concept was so crazy, it just might work. Of course, McGoohan was far more interested in allegory than espionage. He believed the Orwellian nightmare of Big Brother was upon us, and he wanted to use The Prisoner to get people to think about it. 50 years later, we're still thinking, and we're still thrilled by the most intelligent and thought-provoking entertainment series ever created.
And now, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
Hey, everybody. This is your friend in podcasting, Phil Lairness. Welcome to your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. As always, with the star of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, all the way from Sydney, Australia, Mr. Dean Haglund. How are you, Dean?
Hey, Phil. How are you? Good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I think you asked me how I am 3 or 4 times in that opening statement. That was terrific.
Well, because, you know, I really got to jam it. I never ask you otherwise, so...
You're getting them in advance, and so I can consider myself asked in future episodes. Well, I am thrilled, Dean, because, of course, this whole show not only is about one of my favorite, one of my favorite things in the history of the universe, The Prisoner, but we also welcome a very special guest all the way from the Emerald City of Seattle, Carl Frunz. Carl, are you there?
Carl.
I am. Good afternoon, Dean and Phil. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Likewise. Though technically it's morning here, but I'll take the afternoon.
Well,
as they used to say, good morning, good night, good evening to all the ships at sea. So if you're not at a ship.
Exactly.
And that, by the way, the ships at sea. So you've done your demographic research, because that's where you find the vast majority of our listening audience is on the ships.
Merchant
at
Marines?
Sea. Yeah. Yes.
And retired couples.
Retired couples. So they used to be couples, but now they're retired. Welcome to our best or our worst opening ever. Carl, you are responsible for an incredible event that's coming up later this year, a convention celebrating the 50th anniversary of the television series The Prisoner.
Correct. We are beyond knees and up to neck deep in pulling all the pieces together. This is, as I said to a friend the other day, the fastest and the longest 3 years of my life to get to this point. And now we are just waving the banner as high and as fast as we can to hopefully have everybody who can and will and would be with us in Seattle in September.
Fantastic. Now, it took 3 years, so this has been a long time planning.
I noticed, you know, like any project, you've got to keep an archive. And the other day I was trying to thin that out, and I fumbled upon the very first email, the very first time I put this on paper, and it was March of 2014. And it went, of course, the email went to the gentleman who runs the one touchstone for all things Prisoner, which is the Unmutual website. And as I looked at that, I thought, my God, how could it be that 3 years has gone by this quick? But that's what happens in life.
Right, because there's a lot of planning involved, as we know.
Well, first of all, when we'll dial back to this at the end, let's let people know how they can learn details about the event so that maybe they can be looking that up while they're listening to us talk about the event.
Absolutely. Thank you. So the website is very simple. It's theprisonercon2017.com. And on that website, there are five tabs, one that expresses about welcoming, one that's about the program listing all the guests, one that helps people understand where this is going to take place in terms of the venues, how to register, and then the most important, well, I think one of the most important things is there's a page right now with 200 badges. And as each person joins and becomes what we refer to as a villager, we're converting those badges and linking them to their Facebook business page, whatever it would be. Because one of the things I really want to happen is that this builds a community. And a community doesn't happen instantaneously. So the idea is as people join and as they register, they're going to start to see, oh, somebody else is in Denver. Oh, look at that. Somebody else is in Sydney. And consequently, before we're all here together, people will have made friends. So it's again, about that idea of community before an event.
So
that's
well,
fantastic.
So if you're already, and I believe me, I've actually spent my time on the badge page. That for me is just, I mean, I gravitated right towards that on the website. If I were to join and to become a villager, then when the next person joins, is there a webcam where I'm able to watch them wake up and realize that they are now a member of this community?
That all depends on what web link into their world they give me to connect to. That's okay. What I would say.
Because then we get to instant message, you're new here.
I'm not a number.
Carl, no, you actually, you aspire to be a number, Dean Haglund. That's the interesting thing about you.
It's true, actually.
But tell me this, Carl, tons of guns, Franz. How does one get up one day and say, you know what seems to be fun? Undertaking the planning of a gigantic convention for the 50th anniversary of something that is beloved worldwide, and not only beloved, but that people have quite a proprietary sense of. So you're asking for all the pressure imaginable. How does one get up? Do you have convention planning in your background?
Yes and no. So I have always, for decades, like that community you just mentioned, I have cherished the show. But for me, there's an idea about things being tangible. A television show, even though we can own the DVDs, is really a conceptual idea. Yet, as human beings, there's this amazing connection when we come together and we share something. I happen to live in Seattle, mere blocks away from all the sports arenas. And though I'm not a sports fan, it is really amazing when you feel the vibe of people that are going to be there together and you hear the sound of it. And so maybe it was that stimulus, maybe it was something else, or maybe the fact that I was just sober that day. But I decided, wait a minute, clock is happening. This 50th anniversary is going to be, and if we don't acknowledge it, if we don't recognize it, that's pretty sad. In my day-to-day life, in my job, I'm a teacher in corporate environments. So the truth of the matter is I organize events of this nature all the time. The idea of being a couple of years ahead, the idea of understanding what venue, but more importantly for me was that when I sat down and thought, how would we do this? I didn't want it to be a passive activity. So here's the teacher in me. The idea of putting a group of people together and saying, I'm going to talk at you, doesn't involve them. So from the very start, I thought, how could we do this so that the audience is constantly engaged? And that's where it began. And then it really just, like anything, was any project, there's a logic to it. You had to define where, because that's the first important thing. And in Seattle, we've picked three beautiful venues. Then you had to define, well, okay, with whom? And I have to say that the outreach that I've done and the connection that I've had with the 10 people that are going to be here as guests, if the event never happens, that was enough satisfaction, because all of their responses have been amazing and generous and supportive and kind, and it's been so exciting. And then in between all that is the little logistics, the idea of being able to put ads in event brochures and all those kind of things. So my friend Brianne, who is the collaborator on this, we'll call her the brains and the beauty and all the rest of it. She always laughs because she's like, this is something you just understand. I'm like, yeah, I understand organization. So that's why I think we've been able to get to this point without any tumbles or falls.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic, because I see you got a big range of actors coming, I assume, from the UK who were in the show.
Well, no, that's yeah. The interesting thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, why don't you run us through? You mentioned 10, sure. 10 guests thus far. Yep. Run us through who they are and what they'll be doing.
Absolutely. So divided into the A's, there's actors, artists, authors, and academics. I love a little alliteration, and I love the fact that we have people in all categories. Okay. So under the actors, I actually sat down at the start and made an Excel spreadsheet of all the episodes, all the actors, and then, alas, had to define who was still with us. So right. I knew very quickly this is a unique and small group of people that could be a part of us. Fundamentally, only about 6 or 7 human beings still with us. So I began my process, and I, the very first person to come on board who was unbelievably supportive and generous was Jane Morrow.
Right.
Again, playing Allison and in that classic role. So what started this on an amazing tack is the fact that Jane is our neighbor, because she happens to reside in the state of Idaho.
You're kidding.
No.
How is she doing BBC productions and then get to Idaho?
Well,
she travels back and forth.
Dean Hagland, you live in Sydney, Australia. You do a podcast in Los Angeles. You were on the X-Files in Vancouver last year.
So the airplane. The answer is the airplane?
That airplane.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, so she doesn't know. Actually, in this case, again, she doesn't know. She just wakes up in Idaho in a replica of her BBC studio.
I think that is the case. So she was the very first person who, in the actors, lovingly and very encouragingly said, yes, I'd love to be there. The next person who I was able to communicate with and have had some very, I think, very fun email conversations with is Annette Andre. Again, classic episode. And fortunately for us, she resides in the state of California.
And so, of course, she worked with Patrick on Mr. McGoohan on other projects as well.
Yes.
And it's very exciting. Annette lives just near San Diego and, of course, is on a weekly radio show that yours truly does in the UK. So it's very exciting that she's going to be a part of this. And I'm wondering whether her husband, Arthur Weingarten, will be coming with her, because, you know, he has forgotten more about the production of classic television than most of us will ever learn.
I hope he will. She hasn't mentioned that as yet, but I'm going to hope, because, again, build the community. And then the third person, well, okay, there were some overtures. I will say that this is not all an easy path. There's a lot of effort at writing and trying to reach people and sometimes scratching the head saying, wow, why nothing back? A few people I was able to contact simply were indecisive. But to me, the door is still open. But the third person who I reached and got in touch with was the absolutely amazing and beautiful Norma West. And she was, again, delightful. Now, in the sense of just what you scolded Dean to remind ourselves, we are in a digital world. So Norma has a door open to be one of two ways a guest at the event. We would love to have her here with us. And she owns and operates the most beautiful, I guess I'm going to call it a retreat, a hotel, a bed and breakfast in Spain. It is stunning. And it's linked on our website. And I told Brand, if the convention doesn't come together, I'm just going to Norma's. But Norma has so many responsibilities with that. And she is now trying to find a way to have someone be responsible in her absence. If not, the beautiful thing is she's going to join us by live satellite video. So those are the three actors that have absolutely said yes. I have another, if you will, group of people that I'm continuing to nudge and would love to see if that comes together. In terms of authors, people who have been the script, the writers, the story keepers, I am thrilled that we have two of the top of the pinnacle. So first is Robert Fairclough, who has written so many things, not only the scripts books that I cherish, but the compendiums that have been out in the public market and a lot of articles. And not only that, of course, but he's written on so many other subjects. He's a graphic artist and he's a fascinating person. Mm-hmm. So he is a part of this, is really, to me, part of the histrionics. The other individual is someone that you guys know and someone that I cherish because he, again, was one of the first people to ever say in positive all caps, yes. And that happens to be a very creative gentleman in Vancouver, Canada, named Tim Palgut, who a few years ago wrote this absolutely delightful technical manual about the village. And so having Tim be a part of this takes the idea of the story and giving it such layers and such depth.
Yeah.
Then we have artists. Now, there's a group that used to reside in Boston. They currently now live in Los Angeles. And they go by the name Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, otherwise known as Sophia and Michael. These are creative, absolute driving forces. They not only have made music and movies and art fixtures, but they're just creative types. And though they have technically resigned, or if you will, closed the work they're doing with Do Not Forsake Me, they're going to reenact those performances here in Seattle, do other things with us. And the last of the four A's that I think mattered a lot to me, again, as a teacher, was that we have some academics who are going to come and talk with us and interact with us about how The Prisoner has resonated intellectually, culturally, sociologically. There's a gentleman coming from Germany who's going to talk about the sociological and the media impacts of the show. And we have two individuals coming from a university in Indiana who are going to talk about the spiritual and the sociological ideas of it. So again, I think we got people covered in all four corners of the base.
It sounds like it. Sounds fascinating. And how is it going to be, all weekend long sort of thing, like a Friday through Sunday?
Exactly. The idea is that, keeping with the idea of the show and symmetry, we have created 17, have you ever heard that number before? 17 programs. So moving from fundamentally 11 o'clock on Friday with, of course, Arrival, moving all the way through Friday evening, all day Saturday, including Saturday evening, and then all day Sunday, wrapping up with a special event in the evening, we have 17 sections. But again, based on the idea of keeping the audience both entertained and engaged and active.
Let me ask you, Carl, why Seattle? I mean, I know you're there, some of us were born in Seattle, so we're not being pejorative when we're asking the question. It's just obviously when Dean first brought up the idea of having you guest, I was rolling my eyes, going, "Oh my goodness! Of course, how do I figure out the logistics of getting this three-way Skype going with someone in Sydney and someone in England?" Because I assumed that the 50th anniversary convention would take place at Port Marion. So,
And it will.
It's
important to realize.
Okay.
Yeah. There are going to be multiple events, and that's, to me, what makes this so special. This is not, as I've said from day one, this isn't competition. This is celebration. So it happens to be, and it's already been announced, that on September 29th, Friday, in Port Merion, underwritten or sponsored by the Network Company of England, they are having an event in Port Merion to celebrate that. That was the very first night in, actually, in the Midlands in England, that the show came on the television. And to this date, I don't know what has been arranged in terms of activities or people. They've been quiet about that, but the date is confirmed and it's happening. Okay. Well, my thought is this. We can't all make it to Port Merion.
That's true.
And we can't all make it, the one day I wish I could, to Sydney. And so why here? Well, it's easy to do something in a place where I'm already connected to the venues, meaning, sure, this could be in maybe Oklahoma, that's in the middle of the country, granted. But there's one other facet of Seattle that links to the village, which is we are both cities by a bay. We are both cities surrounded by hills. We are both cities with unusual architecture. And if you've ever met anybody who works at Boeing, they look like a warder. So I thought that symmetry would actually fit pretty well. And beyond that, and forgive me if this sounds even the slightest bit vain, but in 2017, we're blessed that Seattle is a place people want to go. There's activities here. There's companies. It's pretty. So I figured I wasn't taking too much of a risk by asking people to come to this little town.
Well, that's true.
And, of course, in keeping with the themes of the show, the village is everywhere. And anywhere the village is a state of mind. And if there's any doubt that this is one of the themes that Mr. McGoohan was trying to express, I found it at first frustrating and then kind of oddly amusing that it was impossible to ever get Pat to leave the village of Brentwood here in Southern California. He lived here in Southern California forever,
true,
but he would not leave. And he would even talk about it like, oh, next time we could get coffee over in your neighborhood. Yes, if my neighborhood is defined as within the confines of your neighborhood, and he would not leave. I don't know if it was because he didn't realize that there were such things as self-hired cars or what, but he somehow knew. In all seriousness, you know, look, no matter what we're writing, no matter whether we're looking out into the world and into the future or into the past, whatever it is we're writing about, we are, in at least a profoundly unconscious way, we are writing about ourselves. And The Prisoner was far more personal and autobiographical, I think, than many people realize for Pat. But clearly, there was some part of his makeup that he knew that actually gravitated towards the village, that liked the idea of finding a small, comfortable setting in which to live and never leaving. He knew that that idea had an appeal for him. And so where there's fear, there's desire. So what a wonderful thing that he's able to create, to use that to create this this nightmarish dystopia of a village.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how is Seattle? Yeah. That's the thing you have not mentioned, Carl. How is it a nightmarish dystopia for you?
Well, don't ever try to be a person in your mid-50s trying to date in Seattle. Let's not even get into that or I'll start crying.
Oh, my God.
That would be a whole nother convention and two other podcasts. So let's not go into that dystopian world.
Okay.
Let's see. The cost of property in the city is becoming almost Orwellian. And beyond that, though, it's not a part of my day-to-day life. People would tell you the aspect of getting from place to place on those little narrow roads that go around all this water becomes a bit of a challenge.
There is that.
Yes.
But like friends of mine who've have been living in Seattle, go to university there, and then they always want to return. So it's like The Prisoner. That's exactly the similar.
Go ahead, Dean. Sorry.
I'm talking to Phil. Your personal friendship with Patrick McGoohan always fascinated me because I never got to meet him. all the times you said you were hanging out, there was never, hey, Dean, why don't you join us for coffee? That never happened, Phil, in all the years that we knew each other.
Yeah, you know, he was easily irritable, Dean, and no one's going to push buttons like you. Anyway, we can talk about that when we don't have Carl as our guest on why I don't invite you, why you don't get to go to the nice places, Dean.
No, I wanted to hear more personal stories of Patrick McGowan.
Oh, about him, not about ways you embarrass me.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that I know.
But I want to, I'm gonna turn around and point out something about you, Dean Haglund. Yes, you. And then dial in Carl to help answer this question. But Dean, when the X-Files came back, one of the questions I know you got, I know Mitch Pileggi got, I'm sure David and Jillian and Chris got, but was why, after so long, are we still discussing the X-Files? And that was only, 20 years? 25 years after its debut.
25,
something along that. Now here we are, 50 years after the debut of The Prisoner. Gentlemen, why are we still discussing it?
Dean, do you want to go first? Okay.
No, I'll let you, Carl.
My answer is going to fall in line with what has, I believe, always been credited to the show, at least to a core of the programs, is that the content and the concept, the polemic inside the episode, is evergreen. So if you begin with the very first program, the pilot, Arrival, it's touching on, as you just explained, Phil, the ideas of being trapped, but trapped within a world we maybe construct for ourselves. You know, there's that old demographic statistic that says that, unlike Dean, who's moved, the majority of us live and die within 50 miles of where we were born. It's just a fact. So that theme of being, again, the individual in a community, that's never changed, nor will that polemic ever change. But then you look at other episodes. As a teacher, I have used the example so many times of the three-lettered question, why? Why? It's not when and how, it's why.
Right.
The idea of democracy.
This was the theme of our episode last week in no small part, where we spent a lot of time discussing a documentary that we made, but just the way in which, you know, so many of our modern institutions, maybe all of them, from art and culture, mm-hmm, to education, to religion, to politics and business, all of them at their best seem designed towards answering the how of things, but none of them equip us with the tools for exploring the why of anything. And it's the major failing of all our societal touchstones at this point in time. So I think, at least having a show that, as you're pointing out, addresses that topic that no one wants to, but that we all hunger for in some profound level of our psyche, that alone, does keep it. I mean, let's face it, and where that comes in, depending on how one believes the running order, but in the aired order, right, it was the third episode, and it's the one that really propels you, I think, at the end of that, forward. You may have been going, okay, this is a cool little spy show, and I want to find out the answers to this, but you get to that moment with that big idea, and you are propelled into this world of ideas from that point on.
Absolutely. And when I have shared the program with people across my life, whether handing them a DVD or telling them to watch it, I always say there's a lot of things that'll, if you will, draw you in. Visually, to this day, it's still a beautiful program to see in terms of its striking colors and the fact that it uses very, very sharp contrast. So visually, you go, wait a minute, I see lots of things. And second of all, it's cut quickly. So for a show from 50 years ago, its editing and pacing doesn't seem dated. That's great. So that's easy for people to begin and say, okay, this is comfortable. Yes, and the idea of a spy and the idea of the unknown, just like the X-Files, is what intrigues us as an audience. We want the mystery to be unwrapped, but it never does. I just think that where that The Prisoner, where that show changes from being highly entertaining is when it catches somebody's intellect and they say, oh, it's 2017 or it's 1997 or it's 1967. Wow, what they just said is a parable. And how can I take that parable forward? So I'm being pejorative here, but I think most really diehard Prisoner fans are smart people because they're looking at it from a multi-layered point of view. That to me is what distinguishes it being something that'll not stop at 50. This will be a program that people look at as long as we have media, because the idea, it's why we still read Homer, because none of those ideas have ever changed in our society. They're still the same concepts.
And this setting it in an espionage realm, right? This idea that, during the Cold War of the 60s, at the height of the spy boom, it was really exciting to think that this battle of good versus evil was being waged on our behalf, in this clandestine world. And here comes along this show that at the height of that popularity says, you know, all those tools that are being used in these shows and these movies to fight on your behalf can be turned around and used against you. And right. If it's in the shadows, you have no way of knowing. May I say, 50 years later, I can't turn on a news program right now without feeling like the halls of power in Washington, D.C. have become the village. There is nothing but discussions and counter-accusations after accusations about who's wiretapping whom right now.
Right. Well, or to go to even more specific examples where they say the past becomes the future. We live in a society now with closed-circuit television where when Patrick McGowan, when Number Six, when anyone wandered through that village, they knew they were, or they didn't know, they were being seen. Look at a city like London today, where almost everyone's movement from the minute they leave their front door until another destination is able to be tracked on film. That's real. That was not real 50 years ago. It was a fantasy. But so many things that clever and smart futurists understand is you take a seed of what we're doing now and you extrapolate it. So again, many of the ideas of mind control or the idea of narcotics to create change in someone's personality, those have come, for good and for bad, have come to be real. And that's why I think if someone watches one of these programs, they're going to say, oh, hold on, but that's happening. There's the hook.
And I love that an actor is responsible for this really prescient look at surveillance, how the population, civilians, are going to be the subject of surveillance, because he already knew, as actors did, the frustrations and the feelings of being trapped by being watched on a regular basis. There's a way of looking at The Prisoner that foreshadows our reality television existence, our YouTube existence, where everyone wants to be watched on screen all the time. Everyone wants to be the one that's being watched.
And doing it willingly.
And McGowan understood, as so many actors have, you lose something of yourself when you're the one being watched.
And may I go on the tack you were at with the idea of what's happening in current government? Let's also imagine that, are we not that far with the divide in the U.S. between the idea of the unmutuals? You either adhere to the narrative, you adhere to the story being told, and if you don't, both sides accuse you of being unmutual. That's not a democracy. That's not a society. That's not a community. A community cannot be made up of people who just say, I absolutely agree with everything we say. There's no dialogue. So that episode always rang true for me as well, which is his social reprogramming. We do that to people all the time by forcing them to say, you have to be on this side or that side of the discussion. There is no gray area.
Wow. It's true. Now,
and of course, I'm only referring to whether you like or dislike the Kardashians, because that's really what we're talking about, right?
Is that the dividing line?
That's the dividing line. I'm sorry.
Who is number one? Spoiler alert, it's a Kardashian.
Chris.
That's hilarious. Now, is there going to be any discussion of the Ian McKellen, the McKellen remake, The Prisoner?
Well, okay, let's go into that. So,
well, no, I don't think he means on this show necessarily. Will there be any acknowledgement or discussion of it at the convention?
Yeah. At the con, yeah.
I have battled with that because obviously the brilliant people that produced that show, and it was a beautifully well-made show, are probably far more accessible. The challenge is this. In the community of Prisoner fans, the show was not embraced. I don't think it was vilified, but it was not embraced. And right. because it not only started and ended in a different arc than what the original Prisoner TV show did, if we bring that into the discussion at the event, you're having two unique conversations. I think as things get closer, and my hope and prayer is that we are going to have so many people that want to participate. There's a fear about getting enough people to Seattle, but I'm going to use my enthusiasm, my optimism to say that'll happen. If along the way conversations begin or outreach happens from somebody who was involved with that show, absolutely, I would cherish to have more and more and more people be a part of it.
Especially, yeah, but in terms of what their process was. Are you taking themes and saying, look, we need to extrapolate on these. This is our in. This is why we want to do this. And that,
This is the story we want to tell. Yeah.
And then that right. at least puts under a magnifying glass their relationship to the original series in a way that, just watching the remake doesn't afford you. An insight into, go on with what you were going to say, but let me throw into the mix also, how about that revival graphic novel series? Does that get discussed?
Do you mean the 4-part A, B, C, and D?
Was that what it was? I mean, it was more than 20 years ago right now, right?
so you're talking about the one that was written by Dean Motter.
Okay. If you say so, Carl. I don't have it handy. I didn't know we would. I really didn't think we'd bring up the Ian McKellen thing, but obviously, these iterations of the Prisoner, yes. literal in different forms over the years. What's the relationship the convention will take to them?
So you're a mind reader. You're right. 20 years ago, a gentleman in collaboration with one of the publishing companies put out 4 graphic novels, 4 comic books that were entitled A, B, C, and D. And they were later republished into one book called Shattered Village. What's so funny is, as I mentioned, the idea of outreach, that gentleman was somebody I made lots of overtures to last year. And I'm not telling tales out of school at this point, but he actually replied to me just last week and said, I'm so sorry, I didn't see many of these. Please let me consider this. He may join us. And that would be amazing because, see, that's why something that is so powerful as a show that carries forward is because other people start to see chapters of it. It's why Star Wars is so popular, because people see before, after, and around it. And so the continuation or the variation of the story that was written in those books is fascinating. Exactly like the 2 books that were published by Pews Media. And again, both those authors have tried to reach them. One of them is in England. And both of those books add to, I'm going to use that overused phrase, the canon. All of them add to it. None of them take away from it. So if Dean Motter can be with us, that would be awesome. Because again, he was someone who added to it. And having the authors of those subsequent books would be fantastic as well. I simply have been told, I've been told by many people, that fans show up first and foremost, to be able to be in the aura of the actors who participated in the show. And that the books are amazing and that people want to see a whole variety of people. So that's why we tried to create a collection of guests and balance it between all four areas.
Right. Speaking, just one quick question. Merchandise? Sure. Will I be able to get a black jacket with white piping?
So we are going to make a set of different commemoratives because I'm sentimental. I believe you have to have something to remember it. So Brianne and I have already come up with a whole list of things, including people will receive a beautiful, if not almost porcelain, a metallic badge, magnetized back, that kind of thing. People will get, in the style of the village, an ID card with their number, their picture. They'll get all these things, these little things that are about moments in the show and about moments in the event. Oh. But I'm not looking to make this a quote-unquote commercial endeavor. Like, for example, we are not going to have a dealer's room like so many conventions you've been to your life. Right. I don't think the fans of this are looking to show up to buy beaded wall hangings and things like that.
Right.
But we would like to. There is, as a matter of fact, there are two small design schools in Seattle. And as a teacher, again, I think you support students. So one of the things I did was I approached one of the schools and said, would you be interested in taking a standard blazer, sewing on some piping, and making a couple of bucks if people wanted them? So as we get closer to the event, what we're going to do is put a link up to these design schools so that if someone wants to dress in the garb, they could send them and say, I need a 42 long. There you go.
So
it's again the idea of connecting people to other resources.
Right. Fantastic.
One of the reasons that I believe that the prisoner still being discussed, that it will not be forgotten, is that among storytellers, professional storytellers and across various mediums, it clearly still holds such an influence, right? From movies, like, I mean, first of all, there's literal references in shows like The Simpsons, and when you're referenced in The Simpsons, it's proof that you're still a cultural touchstone. But from movies like The Matrix to what I always believed was an unofficial remake on UPN called Nowhere Man, across so many platforms, you see the prisoner either referenced overtly or covertly, and so I'm wondering, Carl, if there's any aspects of different media in our recent popular culture where you say, yes, boy, the prisoner certainly has an influence.
My friend Brianne and I love each other but have very different opinions. That's what good friends are like. There was a show just a couple of years ago on, I believe it was NBC, called Persons Unknown, about a group of people that literally wake up in a hotel in this cordoned off little tiny town, probably 9 blocks. And one arc, 13 episodes, the entire time I watched it, I was riveted going, this is stealing exactly from the concept of The Prisoner. Funny enough, Brianne called me every name in the book. She hated it, absolutely hated it. I think that's the beauty of art. Everybody doesn't have to like it. But let's also remember that where Dean was in Vancouver, there was an entire re-envisioning of a classic show. And right in the middle of it, what did they do? They named the main character the Cyborg Six. So there's all these people who constantly make reference to it. And that again is something. So recently I sent to everybody on our mailing list, I said, do you want everything to be known before you come to Seattle? Or do you want surprises? And of course, the answer was 50-50. I believe that surprise is fun. But some of the things that we do want to do throughout the event is never have it be silent. So during the individual programs, the 17 sections, one of the things we'll do on this massive, beautiful screen inside the Broadway Performance Hall is show videos where artists, musicians have made homages to The Prisoner. That's a way of realizing, as you just said, it's in creative people's minds. Or taking music where people have woven in the soundtrack and woven in dialogue and playing that in the hall so that when people are out getting a coffee, getting whatever, they're realizing, wow, other people took this and made it part of their art. And that's, that to me is the multi-layered nature of it, is 1966, this started before any of us ever saw it. It's like what I'm doing now. Whether it makes it to air, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Right.
But for 50 years, everyone has seen it, perceived it, and then said, how did it motivate or stimulate me? And that's what I think is going to be fascinating, is showing people, here's how someone contextualized it. Here's how they correlated it. So one of the 17 sections is to look at, again, all of the different programs and things where we've seen this be held in high regard, to remind everybody.
Please tell me that that panel will be the Living in Harmony panel. Please.
To reveal a little more, it's at the very second episode or second part of this, which isn't utilizing the title Once Upon a Time.
Okay.
Because I felt by using Once Upon a Time as a title, we can say, once upon a time, a man named Patrick McGoohan, and here's what happened, but then more importantly, here's where it went to.
I suggested Living in Harmony because, of course, it's the episode that's set in an entirely different genre, and so it would be interesting to explore how the themes of The Prisoner weave into other genres. But I'm not running.
Yes.
I'll do that at my convention.
Please.
We're running woefully short on time. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about any other Patrick McGoohan works that you think not only are entertaining or rewarding for a viewer, but that might also lend some insight into, you know, it's always valuable if you love a particular book mm-hmm. by a certain author, it's always valuable to read more by that author, if only because it will help you gain further insight into that work you love. I'm sure the same is true as a painting, right, Dean? I mean,
absolutely.
The more you get to know,
you see the whole ouvre, as the word is. I think I said that right.
Yeah, I don't know, but I congratulate you either way. And what other works, Carl, would you maybe recommend if someone wanted to maybe learn a little bit more about the man, his work, and gain some other insights into The Prisoner?
Sure. So, like any artist, I'm sure that Patrick McGoohan would have loved to have dictated exactly what he was in, but as an artist, as a commercial person, you have to choose and you have to have a career. There were great things he did before The Prisoner. One of the ones that people talk a great deal about insofar as rawness was this movie he did called Hell Drivers, where you see kind of a commercial and an industrial setting and how do people suffer, and you see his fortitude. But you also see, at the exact same time as The Prisoner, which actually impacted the show, was when he made a film called Ice Station Zebra. And I enjoyed that show, or that movie, because he plays a very, if you will, guarded or hidden character. We don't know if this person's good or bad. And that's similar to The Prisoner.
Oh, I've already vouched for Mr. Vaslov. As for me, you can safely eliminate me.
Why?
Oh, you must.
Why?
Biological absurdity. Haven't you forgotten, Captain, I'm in charge of this operation?
Never entered my mind.
Well, then you'd better take another look at your orders. I haven't labored the point so far, because up to now you've been doing all that's been required of you. But the primary objective of this mission is to get me to Ice Station Zebra. Those orders come to you from your chief of naval operations and direct to him from your president. So before we go any further, I suggest that you get me there, put another torpedo up the spout, blow a hole in the ice, and get me there!
Later, one of the movies I really think he was underappreciated in, but again, what a corollary, was the movie Alcatraz with him and Clint Eastwood. And that was a brilliant performance,
right,
especially reversing the role.
He plays the warder, and there is so much role reversal, right? I mean, this is a man, this is an actor, as we talked about at the opening, who turned down the role of James Bond for a variety of reasons, but one of which was the violence and the gunplay. And and boy, starting with Fallout and then exploring through the rest of his career, boy, he pivots. into being very much someone prone to violence, and you know, to being the opposite side of the coin he was depicting so often through his earlier work. Mm-hmm.
And of course, the pinnacle of it all, I mean, let's be honest, we all own a DVD copy of the Walt Disney film Baby about the dinosaur, and that's a great show. Come on. He finds a dinosaur. You got to love that one.
Got to love that.
What about Kings and Desperate Men from writer-director Alexis Kanner, the kid from The Prisoner?
Yes.
That's an interesting, and video... or Scanners, rather, also lends some insight, yeah. I think, as well. But any comments about that?
I have only read about Alex Karras' piece. I have never had the privilege to see it, never had a copy of it. Would love to. I think from what I've read is it sounds very, very theatrical in the sense that it probably would be a beautiful stage play because it's such a dynamic between a couple of characters. But I'm also worried that it'd be very intense, like another example of the episode we just said, Once Upon a Time.
So I love some of the description that we've given for the show, for The Prisoner during this installment. And, you know, one of the things I was saying about, The Prisoner being so personal to Patrick McGoohan, it's also to a degree, all these descriptives we're using to the show also apply to the man himself. And I was drawn to a quote by Orson Welles, who of course saw McGoohan on stage in the West End and was so impressed, although Welles later used the word intimidated. And this is Orson Welles of 1955. He'd accomplished quite a bit. So for him to be intimidated by a young actor is saying something. But he said that, when he cast McGoohan as Starbuck in his stage production of Moby Dick rehearsed, McGoohan had all the required attributes, the looks, the intensity, the talent, and the mischievous twinkle in his eye to become a really, really big star. And it's this last one, this mischievous twinkle in the eye, that I don't think can be understated in terms of the continuing appeal of The Prisoner. It is a funny, whimsical show, even when it's plumbing some really dark psychological terrain.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Yeah.
Well, Carl, it's been a thrill to have you on the show. We wish you so much luck with this event and hope you'll keep us apprised so that we can continue to inform our listeners about how the progress is developing. And I'm sure we will have some listeners in the Pacific Northwest who will make the trek to your convention.
Well, back to those airplanes, we hope they come from far. And close, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you, Carl.
I will send you all the updates so that you can be aware of how we get to the doorway. And if nothing else, now at least I know when I get my magical opportunity to go to Australia, I have a friend I can stay with in Sydney.
Absolutely.
So that's all worked out.
It all worked out. Absolutely. And say hi to Tim for me as well.
We definitely will. I just spoke with him yesterday. Tim, bless his technological heart, actually helped me get the Skype thing going. So let's thank him for that.
Fantastic. Yes. Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Carl.
General, best regards. Talk to you soon.
Dean, you were asking about just some of the personal stories that I had about Pat. And I'll just share with you this, that what was really interesting was I would sit and have a conversation with him. He was a big letter writer, actually. Didn't do email at all. He was always up late at night. He would write all night long. But he was a prolific letter writer on a typewriter. And what I would find is, and something I still do to this day, right? If someone's preferred method of communication is text, I'll text. If their preferred method is Facebook Messenger, that's what I'll do. If it's email, I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'm able to do all these things, and I will do whatever you know, the person I want to communicate with feels most comfortable doing. And
right.
And with Patrick, it was letters. So I found myself writing long letters, and we would correspond by mail from Los Feliz to Brentwood. And one day, I had asked him about this long-standing, not rumor, because I think he started it and acknowledged it in interviews, but he did it at a time where I think he was tired of talking about the prisoner. In fact, he would say, thus puts to bed the last interview I'll ever do about the prisoner. And this is back in the 80s when he was doing a show on Broadway. You know, he was just tired. He wanted of talking about it. But he said that he'd often wished that they could have found somebody better to play the part. He would have preferred not to play number six, but rather to be, you know, the creative behind it solely. And there was a variety of reasons for this. But I asked him about that when we were together one time, and he acted like he'd never heard that statement. Like, of course it had to be me. Of course I had to be the one that did it. And one of the reasons is because it got greenlit, as I explained at the beginning, because of his contract status as a television star with ITV. But but I remember thinking about that. And I remember the end of the very series where some of the recurring characters in the very last episode are shown, and the actor who played them gets the credit over the image of them embodying that character. But when they cut to McGoohan, it doesn't credit him as Patrick McGoohan. It credits him simply as prisoner. And in the middle of the night, I realized just how deeply personal and in some ways autobiographical this show was. And I wrote him a letter about that. And the response that I got was amazing. Was amazing about how I had tapped into some real truths about him and about his relationship to the show. So I will always savor that particular memory.
That's a great story. That's lovely.
And as we know, and as we talked about last week, right? Whatever the work we're doing, even if it's a work for hire, it reveals us, right? Whether we know it
so true
or not, it reveals
exactly
us. So, hey, that brings us to an end of another exciting installment of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. We'll be back next week with celebrity deaths and movies and television and so much more. Find every episode we've ever done at chilpackhollywood.com.
Yes. And you can stream it. And what can you do? You can stream us and listen to iTunes.
Subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, all those things. Write a review. Write us, please, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. And, Dean, can people...
follow us on
They can. They
Twitter
can follow us on
Instagram.
Oh, that's exciting.
Oh,
how do they do that?
Well, you just look up Dean and Phil and spell out the word and.
Very exciting.
Just littered with stuff that we do.
Hey, there's two chances to see the recent movie we made, The Lady Killers, in March if you're in Southern California. So you may want to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com. I think it's Lady Killers Movie. I don't know. We link about it on our Facebook pages, but also theladykillersmovie.com.
Well, yeah, that's going to be up today.
Well, that'll be very exciting. So until next week, I'm Phil Larenas.
I'm Dean Haglund. See you then.
Be seeing you.
Promotional consideration paid for by Empire State Gas. From farm to pump, we've got great gas.
Think you can escape number six?
I'm going to do better than that.
Oh. Going to escape and come back.
Come back?
I mean, escape, come back, wipe this place off the face of the earth, obliterate it, and you with it.
Belated spoiler alert.